Welcome to episode 202 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast.
Okay, friends, people often ask me what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without. And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serrapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serrapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serrapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serrapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serrapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serrapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serrapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serrapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we will put all this information in the show notes.
Hi, friends. Now, I know most of you are familiar with the power of protein to help us to recompose our bodies, get fitter and leaner by losing body fat and protecting and gaining muscle or lean body mass. Now, protein supplementation is one of the best ways to do it. It is scientifically validated to help us produce high quality weight loss. Now, when it comes to weight loss, traditionally, a lot of people will do high carb, low calorie diets, and those have been shown to generate upwards of 40% lean body mass loss. Now, protecting your lean body mass and your muscle is crucial when you are wanting to lose some fat, because during weight loss, you don't want the weight lost to be coming from your muscle. The more muscle you're able to retain, the more you're retaining metabolically active tissue, which is going to keep your metabolic rate much higher and help you maintain the fat loss after you have achieved it. Now, one of the best ways, as I said, to do this is through using protein shakes. I've been on the lookout for years to find a high quality protein supplement that does not have fillers, dyes, artificial sweeteners, and using cheap protein concentrate, which can cause all kinds of issues like bloating and indigestion. I finally created a protein supplement that meets my standards, and it's something that I personally use every single day, and that is Tone Protein. Tone Protein not only is extremely clean and high quality with only whey protein isolate, no concentrates, no fillers. It is also scientifically formulated to optimize muscle protein synthesis, which is going to help you build lean body mass and muscle in the most efficient way possible. I am so incredibly excited about Tone Protein. Not only is it extremely high quality and optimized to help you recompose your body, it is also absolutely delicious. We've been having so much fun with all the different flavors that we are creating, and I just can't wait for you all to try it. Now, I wanted to create a special launch discount for all of you listeners so that you could check it out, try it out, see how you like it, and test it out for yourself. In order to receive that launch discount, you can head over to toneprotein.com and sign up with your name and email address, and you'll receive an email to double opt in to the list, and you will be the first to know when Tone Protein is available to order, and you will also receive that exclusive launch discount. It is going to be the biggest discount that we ever offer on Tone Protein, so I really want all of you to be able to receive it. So be sure to go to toneprotein.com, sign up with your name and email, and you'll be double opted in to that list. And I am so excited for you all to try it out. Let me know what you think of it, and let it help you to optimize your body recomposition goals, get that fat loss, and maintain and protect your lean body mass while doing it.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 202 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
How are you today, Jen?
I'm in the stage of book writing where one minute I'm like, this is the best book I've ever written. And the next minute I'm like, this book is the worst book I've ever seen. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's the love-hate relationship of the writing process. It makes you like question everything. And then you find something, you find things people are saying. And then you're like, all right, let me find something in PubMed that backs it up. And that's not what PubMed says. You're like, what? Are we all wrong about this? Then you start digging some more. Anyway.
I feel like it's the perfect example of can't see the forest for the trees, because you've been writing it for so long and it's all your words and you can't get a perspective of like what it looks like from the outside.
Right now it's a big old hot mess, but it's getting there. I'm getting there.
A lot of trees.
Yeah. I like to just throw everything in a pile and then sort it. So that's what I'm writing, like it's a big giant pile, and then I'm sorting it as I go. So
that's what I do. I kind of like word vomit, like write.
That's what I'm doing. I'm in the word vomit stage. That's a really good way of explaining it. And then you clean it up and make it tell a story and make sense. But right now it feels like word vomit. So I'm like, how am I going to put the, anyway, I have the organizational structure obviously figured out, but I'm just like, it's a lot. You forget. It's like childbirth, right? Once you've had kids, you forget about the process. You're like, there's my child, my baby. My baby's so pretty. But you forget about all the hard parts.
I guess it, for me, it'd be like my septoplasty surgery.
There you go. it's worth it now, but going through it, you're like, why am I doing this again? I like my other book. That's enough.
I used to think I was original in saying this quote, and then I realized I feel like this is like a really famous quote by somebody about writing with wine and then editing with caffeine.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever heard that.
I always used to say I write with wine and then I edit with caffeine, but that's like a quote. Wait, let me look it up.
Well, you know, it makes sense because you have to be in the flow. You know, when you're writing and we're in the creative process, you're in the flow and you just kind of let loose and you get out of your way. And there's that word vomit that you talked about where you just put it all in there and then you go back and you're like, what did I say? And that's when you need to focus and try to make it make sense.
Yes, exactly. So I'm sorry that you're off the wine train.
No, it's okay. Oh, they're sorry that I'm off the wine. Well, I am still a little bit salty about that, I must admit. Like the other night, I had like a tiny microdose of wine. You know, we've got, Chad can go through a bottle of dry form wines in like 2 weeks. I mean, he drinks really slow. He's an original microdoser, but he had some. So I poured a tiny little bit in my glass and had a little microdose, a little Melanie microdose, and I was fine. But then the next night, I was like, well, I'm just going to have like an inch of wine. That's hardly anything. And then I tossed and turned all night. So I know it really, you know, it really affects me.
I've definitely learned with my Oura Ring, like when wine does or does not affect my sleep and heart rate variability. And
oh, when does it?
Normally, I usually have like probably a glass, if that, before my one meal a day dinner. And if I do all that, I'm completely fine. Surprisingly, if I am at properly socially distanced gatherings where I'm drinking more, and even if it's not dry from wines, as long as it's earlier in the evening and that's all that I'm doing, and then I come back, I'm actually still fine. It's only when I am drinking a lot more and I'm at home, so I think it's too close to going to bed. It's like the Oura Ring knows. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize it again, like I said before, until I started with my bed tracking. Like my bed, I'd be like, oh my gosh, look at how little I slept last night. You know, just like the Oura Ring, it let me know. And it tells me my heart rate variability and all of that. So the point of it is, it's hard to undo the association that my brain has with, you know, hey, it's Friday night and I'm going to unwind with a glass of wine. Even just one glass, I feel like, you know. I'm like, no, I don't need to unwind with wine. That's a tongue twister.
You know, my dad actually texted me yesterday because I got him dry farm wines for Christmas. He's been texting me every time he opens the bottle, like, love the dry farm wines. So finally yesterday I was like, Dad, you know, you could sign up for a subscription. And so he is doing that.
Oh, yay, Dad.
I know, my sneaky Christmas present maneuver, because I want him drinking it because I think it's so much healthier. So for listeners, if you'd like to get your own dry farm wines, even if you just want to microdose it, like Jen, have a little tablespoon, our link is dryfarmwines.com/IFpodcast. And at that link, you will get a bottle for a penny.
I'm sure listeners are laughing because how many of the things that you say that you do, I'm like, I'm never going to do that. And I'm like, guess what I'm doing now? Oh, that's funny.
I have a really fun story.
Okay. I love fun stories.
I was going to tell you this after we talked, but I just realized I could just tell it on the podcast. My new obsession is, well, not my new obsession, but my new research obsession is deuterium depleted water. I think I've been talking.
And see, and I don't even know what that is. You said what, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'm really shocked that people don't know more about it. In the past week, I have talked to basically two of the main figures in that. It's not even a movement because people aren't really aware of it, but in that sphere. And talking to them and doing research, I am blown away how we're not thinking about this more. Basically what it is, like really long story short, and you could ask Chad this since this is like about molecules.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So apparently there are three types of hydrogen. There's hydrogen, like hydrogen bombs, that doesn't really exist anymore. There's protium, which is the type of hydrogen found in normal water. And then there's deuterium, which is hydrogen with like an extra neutron on it. So it's heavier than normal hydrogen. And so water can be made of both types of hydrogen. And the heavier type, the deuterium, because water goes into our mitochondria and is used for energy, the deuterium literally wrecks our mitochondria. Like it gunks up, which for listeners, if they're not familiar, our mitochondria are the part of our cells that generate energy in our body. So when we take in high levels of deuterium, it literally slows down and impedes the entirety of our body's energy processes. And I mean, I'm just kind of blown away.
Was water naturally deuterium depleted or didn't have it? How's this happened?
Like, why is it worse now?
Yeah.
Well, yes, the water changes and it has changed throughout time. We naturally deplete it through healthy practices. And what's interesting is one of the guys that I interviewed this week, which has to do with the story, he said he thinks basically the reason everything is helping the way it helps us, so like fasting, cold exposure, sauna, exercise, is because it's depleting deuterium. Like, he thinks it's like the common factor. And he actually thinks it's the common factor in cancer. But yeah, so fasting depletes deuterium. And like a lot of the lifestyle things that we do that are considered to be unhealthy are encouraged deuterium buildup. But so the story is, I first heard about this, I think, Jen, I think you were on the interview, because I think it was our interview with Juve, or I don't know if it was my interview or the one that we both did. Do you remember it coming up ever?
Well, it's been so long.
Yeah. So when I interviewed Scott at Juve, because I've interviewed him twice, and one of them was on this show, that's the first time I'd ever heard of deuterium. It was, because I remember us both, like, I can see in my head us both listening to him talk about it. And he had mentioned a Dr. Q Collins, and this was literally like 2 years ago. And I was like, I got to track down this guy and, you know, bring him on my show. And so a few months ago, I didn't reach out to him. His agents or his people reached out to me and asked if he could come on the show. And I was so excited because I've been wanting to interview him like for 2 years. So we had the interview this past week. Jen, okay, so I got on the call and he started like freaking out, fanboying, saying that he just realized this week that he was interviewing with me and how he's been a fan of me.
Oh, wow.
For a long time.
That's so awesome.
It was crazy. I was like, what? People know about me? like people I like really look up to and respect. But it was just really, really exciting because I always feel like I'm looking from the outside in, like through a window into like the biohacking world. So it's really exciting to know that people consider me.
You're inside the house.
I know, yes. You know, but I always feel like I'm like looking in the window.
I know, me too. Me too. I know exactly what you mean. You're like, what do you mean you've heard of me? What?
Huh? What? And he was like legitimately like excited. And I was like, this is so wonderful. I'm really happy. For listeners, I will report back, because not him, but the other deuterium figure that I talked to, they're going to send me 2 months of deuterium depleted water. So I'm going to do a deuterium depletion protocol and test my levels before and after and see if it changes my life.
How do you test them?
I'm not sure what the test is. I know there's like a saliva test, a breath test, might be a blood test. I'm not sure.
Well, that's so interesting. I can't wait to hear.
I know. So
I'm not going to say I won't do that, as long as you don't have to do it while you're in the cold shower.
No. The cold shower would help, though. You do have to make all of your coffee with the deuterium depleted water.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So right now what I'm doing is they want me to figure out how much water I drink per day so they can know how much.
Oh, that would be tricky, because I have no idea. I'm really bad at tracking and measuring things.
Well, I drink out of the Whole Foods liters, so I'm just seeing how many I drink per day.
Like right now I'm drinking a mug of hot water.
You and your hot water. I don't think I'm ever going to do that.
I know, because I'm freezing. I'm so cold. It's so good, though.
But I like being cold.
I don't.
It's just hot water.
It's so good. I promise you. It's delicious.
So is cold water.
Yeah, I drink that, too. But it just makes me feel soothed from the inside out.
Cold water on your body.
Hot water from the inside out.
Yep. All right. Shall we jump into everything for today?
Yes. We have some feedback from Samantha, and the subject is eating with family. She says, I keep hearing about moms who are trying to IF having issues with family meals. That's definitely an issue for many of us. Today's question partially had to do with the family having to wait around while mom finishes her meal. One of my children and I had this discussion yesterday. Kids are conditioned to eat quickly at school. We need to teach them to eat slowly at home and away from school. It's healthier in the long run to eat slowly and hear your body's cues and savor your food. Let's encourage moms to teach this. It helps everyone with the dilemma. Man, I love that. That is so true. As somebody who was a teacher for 28 years, you know, they have in Georgia, I don't know what it is everywhere else, but in Georgia at our school where I worked, they had 30 minutes. These were elementary kids, 30 minutes in and out of the cafeteria. But that didn't mean 30 minutes at the table, because if you were like running a little late to the cafeteria, or if the person who was before you in the lunch line, teachers who are always late, that's my pet peeve because I was always on time, they were late and they would get there and they would hold you up. Or if the lunch line, if it was pizza day, your class might take you know, 8 minutes to get through the lunch line. And then by the time they're seated, you know, that eats into their 30 minutes. Maybe the 10 minutes is gone. Now they only have 20 minutes. And maybe the, you know, they get up 3 minutes early. So they're really cramming in the food. So.
Yeah, I remember that from the entirety of my like school. I remember it being very distressing to me because I like to have plenty of time. I don't like being just in general, like I don't like being rushed. And yeah, by the time you get your food, I mean, it was very, very brief that you actually had to eat. I think that's a huge problem. I think kids having to go to school so early, like the sleep deprivation and everything.
Right. And that might not be their typical, you know, circadian rhythm of stage of their life of when they would want to get up or eat. Yeah, I love that idea. Instead of feeling like you have to keep up with their fast pace, teach them to learn from you and slow down.
We don't talk about it much, but I think it's one of my favorite things about intermittent fasting, one meal a day, is just how incredibly long I take to eat my meal. I love it. I love savoring it. I don't miss rushing meals.
Yeah, I don't like to be in a rush either. Absolutely not.
All right. So now we have two questions about coffee that I'm going to read. The first one is from Christina. The subject is how much black coffee? And Christina says, is there a limit to how much coffee you can drink? I'm in my second week of the clean fast. I'm not very good with water, so drinking a few cups of coffee in the morning, thanks.
Okay, do you want me to answer that one now?
Sure.
Okay. There really isn't an answer to that that would be universal. You know, I've talked before about being a slow alcohol metabolizer, meaning that, you know, the rule of thumb that we hear is that it takes an hour to metabolize, you know, one unit of alcohol, whatever that might be in terms of whether it's wine or beer or whatever. Well, that's not true for my body. My body clears alcohol more slowly, so I have to drink less alcohol than someone else. There, you can also be a slow caffeine metabolizer. That's a thing. My DNA indicated I was not a slow caffeine metabolizer, thank goodness, so I can handle caffeine better. So thank the Lord, I'd be so sad if I metabolized everything slowly, but I can, you know, coffee's not a problem for me. Wine is. So I think you know when you're having too much, you can feel it. You know, if you feel like it's affecting your sleep negatively, cut back on it. Our bodies tell us when we're having too much of something generally. You know, when we look at long-term research on, you know, coffee, there is an association between longevity and coffee consumption. So I wouldn't worry about like, oh my gosh, is this bad for me? If you feel great, you're probably fine.
That was exactly what I was going to say, was it's individual, the caffeine metabolism rate. So the half-life of caffeine, I was thinking about this actually last night because I was reading Sean Stevenson's new book, Eat Smarter. And he had a whole section on the half-life of caffeine and slow and fast caffeine metabolizers. And he was saying, you know, the half-life of caffeine is about 6 hours, which means after you drink coffee, 6 hours later, half of the caffeine is gone. But that would completely depend, I think, on if you're a slow or fast metabolizer. But in any case, I feel like just finding the amount that supports the best energy level for you without creating a slump or a drop, and also which doesn't interfere with your sleep.
Yeah, I think that's great advice.
I think is huge. And that can be really different amounts for different people.
You know what really freaked me out when I realized I was a slow alcohol metabolizer was the idea that maybe I accidentally did drunk driving like the next day without even meaning to. Like I would sleep all night and wake up and let's say I'd been at the beach and then I had to drive home. You know, was there enough alcohol in my system? Because I would never drive after drinking. Never, never, never. You know, I would, if I had one glass of wine, I wouldn't drive. But, you know, it's the next day. You're thinking, I've been sleeping. It's 12 hours later. It must be fine. Maybe I wasn't. Anyway, that freaks me out to think about because I'm such a law-abiding person. I would never, you know, I was like the Uber girl. I would Uber everywhere the night of. But anyway.
I did want to throw out there, I do think in general, though, I go back and forth. I do a lot of research. Sometimes I'm like, I want to drink no coffee. I want to be like, no stimulants, no depressants, no nothing, just water and fasting. And the studies pretty consistently show that, you know, moderate coffee consumption tends to correlate pretty well to so many health benefits.
It's those polyphenols.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's that thing that if you like it and it makes you feel good, you should embrace it because it has benefits. And then maybe occasionally if you want to do like a coffee fast or you're not drinking coffee to see how you feel, self-experimentation, that could be fun. But I think this is just me speaking to my own insecurities. If it works for you, keep drinking it.
And I also want to point out one thing that Christina said. She said, I'm not very good with water. And I want to point out that there's a lot of guilt associated with water consumption these days. It's like a spin that's out there in society that you must like force yourself to chug water all the time. But think back, you know, Melanie, you follow the paleo lifestyle. Back in paleo days, were they carrying around jugs of water all the time?
Highly doubt it.
Doubtful. We don't need to think of water consumption as guilt. And there's also a mistaken truth, which means it's not true. It's a mistaken truth that people repeat over and over. Because you know how when people just say things over and over again, you begin to accept it as it must be true? Because I've heard so many people say it. They say, coffee doesn't count as your water. And I'm like, I've looked into that. I've researched it. That is not true. Coffee is mostly water. The reason that whole thought comes from the fact that, you know, coffee, you know, may be slightly dehydrating, but it's not more dehydrating than the amount of the water that you had with it. So it doesn't make you have negative water balance. Like, let's say you have a cup of coffee. It doesn't suck out more than a cup of water from your body. So you're still on the plus side. Would you be more hydrated if it were 100% water instead of coffee? Maybe. But it's not going to be like negative hydration. So stop with that guilt.
That's what I had heard as well, what you just said. Now I'm just thinking, now, okay, follow this train of thought. Let me know what your thoughts are on this. I wonder, however, that aside, because one of the things I talked about in the deuterium interview was the potential ability of a given water substance to hydrate our cells. So there are a lot of factors that affect whether or not water actually is taken up by our cells and hydrates us. I wonder if, depending on context, it could be possible that coffee is dehydrating if the caffeine acts as a diuretic, so it pulls water out of the cells. But because of the nature of the water or your body or whatever, you're not necessarily getting the hydration benefits from the water.
Everything I've read says that it does not have a net dehydrating effect. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't like deplete you. It adds water to your body.
Yeah. I have to revisit all of that.
And I've researched that because people ask that all the time. And so I'll be like, let me look again, see what I see. And it always reinforces that, everything I've found.
So what do they measure? Like,
oh, I don't know.
Like, I'm wondering if they're measuring your, and I don't know the answer to this, I'm just thinking, is it like they're measuring your total body water? Because that might not necessarily indicate hydration within the cell.
Well, here's the thing. We know that there are people out there that don't ever drink pure water by itself. Never. They always are drinking a fluid with something else. They don't drink water. They drink juice. They drink tea. They drink coffee. They drink soda. And those things are mostly water. So they are liquids and they count. When you eat soup, actually, I've even read, you know, about you can actually get so much of your fluid intake through your foods. Like that counts too. Like eating a carrot. I mean, obviously, we're fasting during the day, so that we would not be getting carrot fluid during your fast. But even just eating vegetation gives your body fluids.
I think most whole foods are mostly water compared to processed foods, which have like no water. Even like meat is extremely high in water, which people, I think, find very shocking.
Well, our whole body is mostly water.
Yep, exactly. I think we're 98% water.
I'm not sure. I can't remember. But the point is that fluids are fluids, and don't be guilty about what your fluid is, whether it's coffee, whether it's tea, whether it's pure water. You know, we're not that fragile. You know, some people have found, you know, hey, when I up my water intake, I do seem to have better weight loss. All right, well, then nothing wrong with that, but stop with the guilt over it.
I was just looking it up because I don't know why I have 98 in my head. Something from our water conversation was 98% and the deuterium thing. We're up to, and on average, about 60%.
That's what I thought. I was thinking it was more like 2/3.
So like muscles can be up to 79%.
It's been a long time since I've taught that lesson in the elementary science class, but in my head, I was thinking 2/3.
Brain up to 85. I don't know what that 98 number was.
Hi, friends. So I'm sort of haunted by clothes. If you follow me on Instagram, you probably know that I love wearing all the new clothes all the time. And I know that that is not really sustainable and not good for the planet. That's why I am thrilled that there is now a way to get all of the clothes with none of the waste. And I'm going to tell you how you can get unlimited clothes with no waste for a month for free. That's right. I now have a website for both myself and you guys where you can get free unlimited clothes with free shipping, free exchanges, nonstop from all of the hottest brands. And it is so incredibly easy. It's called MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com. We have so many incredible brands, including my favorites like BCBG, Calvin Klein, and so many more. Think like 100 brands. There are so many options. And the way it works is when you get a subscription, you search through the clothes, pick what you want. They send it to you with fast, easy shipping. You wear it as long as you want. And then when you're ready for more clothes, you just drop it off in their prepackaged envelope and get your next round. It is so incredibly cool. They have multiple plans. The starter plan gives you two pieces at a time. Friends, I actually have a little secret hacked. Don't tell them that I told you this. When you get your two pieces, you can actually immediately go into your account, click return, and they'll go ahead and send you the next two pieces. So technically, you can have four pieces at a time. You also have a cool virtual closet that you can keep stocked with everything you eventually want to order, so you never miss out. And if you really like something and want to keep it, you can opt to buy it at a massively discounted price. Friends, I'm obsessed. This is finally the answer to wearing all the clothes all the time with none of the waste. Oh, and of course, one of my major reservations was the cleaning compounds that they use on the clothes, because yes, it is dry cleaning, which normally makes me nervous, and they don't say this on the website, so I reached out to them, and I was like, hey, what's going on with the cleaning? What do you guys use? Because I can't promote this if it's just normal dry cleaning. And thankfully, they let me know that they do not use any detergents, fabric softeners, or chemicals that are harsh. Everything is professionally dry cleaned or laundered with detergents that are free from dyes and scents. It's all gentle and it uses low temperature cycles. So yes, we are good on that front as well. It is the coolest thing ever. And you can try it free for a month. Yes, completely free. Just go to MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com to sign up. Free clothes for a month. After that, their plans are super affordable. We're talking, honestly, an entire month is less than the cost of typically what would be the cost of one dress. And I am not kidding. That's right. Unlimited clothes for less than the cost of one outfit. I'm just so thrilled to bring this resource to you guys. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. So again, get free unlimited clothes for a month at MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com. That's MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com for all of the clothes, none of the waste. And definitely share your pictures and tag me on Instagram because I want to see all the fabulous things that you guys are wearing. That's MelanieAvalon'sCloset.com.
Shall we read our next coffee question?
Yes.
We have a question from Sarah. The subject is black coffee. She says, hi, ladies. I'm about 2 weeks into IF. I'm trying to stick to 24, but a couple times a week, I end up at more like 16.8. I have found when I drink black coffee in the morning, I end up feeling so hungry, but when I skip it, I feel great. I love the taste and routine, so I'm hoping that this is just part of the transition. Should I continue to skip it a few weeks, then try to introduce it again? I'm not adding a thing to it. I grind my own whole beans, pull two shots of espresso, and add hot water to it. On a side note, I've been walking 2 to 4 miles each day while fasting, and I love it. I listen to your podcast while I walk, and it makes the time fly.
All right, so that's a great question. You're only about 2 weeks in, so it's really, really hard to say whether it's the coffee or not. But you are right on target, Sarah, when you say that you need to experiment and see. You'll just need to try fasting without it, but give it, you know, like a solid try, like, you know, a week, see what happens. And I even, you know, maybe wait till your body adjusts, because that is another factor, the adjustment period. But you'll just have to, you know, try it and see. Some people are awfully confused about coffee and, you know, whether it breaks a fast or not. And here are some of the common misconceptions people have. First of all, people think that when they drink coffee and then their stomach growls, that means it broke the fast. No. Stomach growling is a mechanical action that does not indicate your fast is broken. Also, some people think, you know, they'll test their blood glucose and they'll say, oh gosh, every time I drink coffee, my blood glucose goes up. Coffee is breaking my fast. Again, no, that's not what that means. Coffee stimulates the liver to release stored glycogen. So the glycogen is coming from inside you and being released into your bloodstream, and then your body uses that glucose, that glycogen that was released, and then your blood glucose goes back down. But remember, we want to stimulate, you know, or we want to deplete the glycogen in our liver over time. That's not a bad thing, because, you know, once your body doesn't have that source of fuel from the liver, the glycogen, you can tap into your fat stores. So don't feel like, you know, that blood glucose going up is a bad thing. Don't feel like a stomach growl is a bad thing. Now, if you feel shaky or nauseous after coffee, that would be an indication that it's making you hungry. It might be dropping your blood glucose. So, you know, keep that in mind. Keep those distinctions. And a lot of people just are confused about all those concepts. What would you like to add, Melanie?
Thought that was great. And I just put on my, I don't even know what number continuous glucose monitor we're on now, but I just put a new one on for listeners. If you ever have a continuous glucose monitor, it can be really fascinating to see how your blood sugar responds to things like coffee and how it responds throughout the fast and all of that. But yes, I agree.
Totally fascinating. It really, really is.
I wonder if it's both caffeinated and decaf coffee that makes her feel hungry.
Yeah, I don't know that she said.
Oh, wait, it's espresso. Espresso.
But you could have decaf espresso.
Oh, true. I always associate espresso with caffeine. That just might be something to try. One or the other, the opposite of whatever you're doing.
Yep, we are very much an experiment of one. All right, we have a question from Shelley, and this is subject podcasts. How do you listen to so many? So therefore, we knew this was for Melanie.
Because Jen does not listen to podcasts.
Even if people send them to me, they're like, please listen. I'm like, I don't want to listen to that one. I don't have time. Shelley says, I started IF at the beginning of 2020 and pretty much stuck with the program for the entire year. This was the bright spot of my 2020. I lost 30 pounds and felt in control of my eating. I still have about 15 pounds to lose, but I'm confident that I can do it. My question, every time I hear Melanie say, I listened to that on a podcast, which she says all the time, I always wonder, what does she do when she's listening to all those hundreds of podcasts? I listen while I do my stretching, strength training, and while I do housework. If I sit down at night to listen, I fall asleep. It really is a burning question. What are you doing while you listen, Melanie? Thanks for all you ladies are doing in the IF world.
Thanks, Shelley, for your question. I basically have an audiobook or a podcast going. Sorry, I'm just thinking about the phrase 24/7 because the phrase 24/7 means constantly, but technically it's not 24/7 because we don't do anything 24/7 except be alive or breathe. I basically listen 24/7 and I just, whenever I'm doing something that doesn't require concentration, so something I can multitask with, I just have it playing in the background all the time. So driving, exercising, working on website, blogs, it's just always playing. It's like the soundtrack in my life. And if I need to focus, then I listen to music instead.
Yeah, I always listen to music, except if I'm trying to focus. Then I can't even listen to music.
Like if it's something where I can't be distracted, I listen to instrumental music, movie scores.
I have to have quiet. I do much better with quiet.
Have you ever tried the focus music with the specific binaural beats or like?
I've tried it even in my classroom with students. Yeah.
Does that work for you or no?
I do better in quiet. I just do. I do better in quiet.
Because I go to the grocery store every single day because I must go to the grocery store every single day. So like on the way there and then while shopping and all of that, I listen. There's so much to listen to. But one of the most freeing decisions I made, I feel like this was right around the beginning of when the pandemic started, but I just had a moment where I was like, you don't have to try to listen to every single podcast ever. Like if I saw any podcast remotely related to something I wanted to know about, I would put it in this to listen list and it was getting so long and I was getting so overwhelmed. And then finally I just let it go and I was like, it's okay. You don't have to listen to everything. You can listen to what you want to listen to. And that has been very freeing. So I encourage listeners, if you have that trait at all, where you think you have to do all the things, you don't have to do all the things.
That's very true.
All right. So the next question comes from Hannah. The subject is, what if I don't just know? Hannah says, hi, Jen and Melanie. You always say that if something breaks your fast, you'll know. My question is that if I don't have a reaction to my fast being accidentally broken, does that somehow indicate that my body isn't really getting into the fat burning state? I've been doing IF for 9 months with an average one meal a day of 21.3 and an occasional mealless Monday. Thanks, Roxy.
Roxy is one of my amazing moderators, and she leads a thread called Mealless Monday, where the, you know, people who are doing an alternate daily fasting approach and fasting on Monday, they fast together in the thread and cheer each other on. And then Tuesday is their up day.
Very cool.
She's pretty awesome. She's also been on Intermittent Fasting Stories, and I consider her to be a great friend.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Roxy. And she says, I lost 20 pounds in the first 4 months that I am maintaining, which I am just delighted about. However, I still have at least 50 pounds to go and I've been stalled for several months. I know I'm insulin resistant because I was diagnosed with PCOS 5 years ago. Luckily, I was still able to have my two little ones. And I recently had my fasting insulin tested and it was at a 10. I keep telling myself that this plateau is just my body healing on the inside, but as I listen to your podcast, I'm also realizing that I don't have the same sensitivity to a broken fast that other IFers experience. I've never felt shaky or hungry by accidentally licking a finger while cooking, and I've had a sip of sweet tea before, thinking it was unsweet and had no reaction. I've also tested myself by sipping something flavored on purpose and nothing happens. What could this mean? Am I not getting into the fasted or fat-burning state in the first place and this is causing my plateau? Is my insulin resistance so severe that this is just going to be a very long road for me? Would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much for continuing to devote yourselves to spreading the word about IF. You two are truly a blessing to so many people.
This is such a great question because it gets into the physiology of insulin resistance, high levels of insulin, and you've got the data there, which makes it, you know, Hannah, your data shows beautifully what I'm going to explain. You know, we've talked about, you know, chronic high levels of insulin, hyperinsulinemia are not good for our bodies. You know, you've got PCOS, which is linked to high levels of insulin. Your insulin was tested and it was at a 10, which is, you know, higher than you want to have it when you're, you know, really metabolically in a good place. You know that you're insulin resistant. So hand in hand with high levels of insulin, we typically have high levels of blood glucose over time as well, because insulin resistance, it's that whole path you go down. Your insulin goes up, 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 up over time. And then people generally start having more trouble with their blood glucose swinging up and being chronically high. You know, your A1C may be high when you have it tested. Then eventually, you know, you may end up with, you know, diagnosed as type 2 diabetic with the high blood glucose that's chronic. So let's think about what would happen if we tasted something sweet and we were normal. Like my blood glucose is at normal levels during the fast. You know, Melanie sees that with her CGM. I saw that when I wore mine for the Zoe test. My blood glucose was at a normal level. It ranged up and down a little bit, but it wasn't high. It wasn't low. It was just in that normal range, up and down. Here it goes. If I had had something sweet, like a sip of sweet tea, and my body released insulin in response to that, the insulin would have cleared away some of my blood glucose, and I would have had a crash. I would have felt shaky. I would have felt hungry. In fact, that's what happens to me when I have, for example, Starbucks, that nitro cold brew. It apparently tricks my brain into thinking that something sweet and creamy is coming. So I have a cephalic phase insulin response. I always get shaky and starving after having it. I think it makes my blood sugar crash because I've had an insulin response. However, if my blood glucose was already high and then I had, you know, that whatever that is, the sweet tea, the nitro cold brew, the sweet whatever it is, the licking your finger, my body can pump out a little insulin and bring down my blood glucose, but not enough for me to feel it as a low. So I'm not going to be shaky because my blood glucose didn't go down into that shaky range. It just went down. Maybe now it's a little more normal. You know, if my blood glucose had been high before, now it's normal, but I don't feel it. So that's why you can't use the you'll know kind of a thing. I actually don't always say that you'll know. And in Fast, Feast, Repeat, I actually say this is not a foolproof way of telling. And it just depends on what your blood glucose is doing. Did I explain that well enough, Melanie? Did that make sense?
That was beautiful.
I need like people to be able to see me because I'm like doing all these hand motions.
That's funny. And just a reference for listeners for insulin levels, because Hannah said that her fasting insulin was a 10. So if you'd like to learn all about insulin, like the deep, deep, deep dive, check out, I'll put a link in the show notes to the interview that I did with Dr. Benjamin Bickman for his book, Why We Get Sick. Really, really fascinating. And that was actually, I think, my first episode of the new year and people just loved it. But he talks about insulin in deep depth and he recommends, is it less than a 6, I think, in insulin levels?
Yeah, I think 6 is really good for metabolic health. You know, 10, that I was going to say this, and I'm glad that you mentioned it because I forgot. 10 is, quote, normal. So if you got a 10 and somebody, you know, was looking at it who didn't really understand ideal, they might say, oh, 10, that's normal. You're fine. Well, you know, Also, insulin resistance is sadly normal these days. So just because you're in that normal range doesn't mean you're at an optimal healthy level. So yeah, 6 is a good something to aim for or below.
He said, ideally, your blood insulin levels should be less than 6 micronutrients per milliliter of blood. 8 to 9 is the average for men and women, but it's not good to be average. In this case, a person with 8 actually has, this is interesting, a person with 8 actually has double the risk of developing type 2 diabetes as a person with a 5. So he recommends less than 6. The technical average is 7 to 17, and greater than 18 is considered conventionally an issue, but like he said, less than 6.
Mine was less than 5.
Yeah, mine was, I think, 4 something when I got it tested, which made me really happy. I was like, what if it's really high? I just want to echo what Jen said about really fabulous that Hannah has done this testing and actually has these markers. And just out of curiosity, Jen, so let's say we got this question from somebody else and they didn't have, you know, PCOS and their insulin was really good and they had this experience. I don't know. Have you come across, have people had this experience where they don't perceive being insulin resistant?
You know, we're all different in so many ways. I think we all probably are likely to have a personalized insulin response as well. You know, my husband has very low levels of insulin. They were like in the 2s, okay? Those were very low. Here's something about Chad that I've said before. He's never struggled with his weight. He's always been very, very thin. Like the biggest his waist ever got was 32. You know, for a man, that's really small. Having low, low levels of insulin. So would he... You know, could he drink a diet soda all day long and probably be fine? I don't know. But he probably pumps out less insulin than I do. And I think that we're all different when it comes to how much insulin we pump out. You know, he might be able to, quote, get away with it. I mean, obviously, that wouldn't be recommended because I think over time, it's not going to have a good effect long term. But it would explain why people have different responses. Because we really do pump out different levels of, I mean, everything.
Yeah. With insulin resistance, one of the main issues is your baseline insulin basically has to be higher to keep everything at the same place that another person would be at. That person's body who's insulin resistant, in a way, they are experiencing the same effect and the same body processes as a person with lower insulin levels, but just the bar is all set up way higher.
It inches its way up over time.
Yeah. Yes, it definitely does. Slowly. I think, and Dr. Benjamin Bickman talks about that, like it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you wake up insulin resistant and you were fine the day before. It's a slow, insidious creep, which is nice because that means there's a lot of time to, you know, reverse that.
Well, one of the best articles I ever read was the one that talked about how are we testing the wrong thing, you know, with A1C. I can't remember the name of the article, but it was written by, I think, by a nurse practitioner. I can't remember, but it was, we are measuring A1C. And it would be much better if we measured insulin levels, fasted insulin levels, because that's the precursor to A1C going up. So if we tested fasting insulin levels, if someone had high fasted insulin, but a normal A1C, we know that's like, well, we're on the rise up. Eventually, you know, it like follows along.
And for listeners, A1C is, it's kind of like a longer term picture of how long and how often the extent to which your blood sugar levels are elevated, because it shows, because when your blood sugars are elevated, it glycates your blood proteins. So it's looking at how glycated are your blood proteins, and the turnover for those is like 3 months. So it kind of shows you in the past 3 months, what has your overall blood sugar. You don't get a blood sugar number, obviously, but it's showing like how severe was your elevated blood sugar levels.
And so like when you start fasting, it isn't going to affect your A1C like that day. You know, it takes time.
Right. Because like you just said, 3 months is how long it takes to, I don't know if that's the half-life or the turnover. I'm not sure. So I wish they did test insulin instead.
But I want to get back to what Hannah said. Is this just going to be a long road for me? Well, yeah, it is more likely to be a long road, which I know is not what you want to hear. But if you know you have PCOS, you know you're insulin resistant, that is where, you know, a strategy, more alternate daily fasting than one meal a day is what I would recommend. I would recommend more down days, maybe a 5-2 hybrid approach. Instead of just mealless Monday, have Monday and Thursday. So you're coming up with a hybrid approach, unless you want to do straight ADF, which is every other day. But that's pretty intense. And it was a lot when I tried it. And of course, it's been, you know, years. 5 years ago since I did that. But what I would probably start with for you is maybe Mondays and Thursdays as mealless days. You can also experiment with them as a down day with the 500 calorie down day approach. Reread that chapter of Fast, Feast, Repeat to remember, you know, why to do it like that if you want or how to do it. But Monday and Thursday down days, that would mean that Tuesday and Friday would be up days. Those are those metabolic boost days where you need at least two meals. Three is also fine. And then you could do one meal a day the other days if you like it. That would be okay. And having those two longer fasts a week, you know, that Monday and then that Thursday fast, 36 to 42 hours, so two of those a week would really help bring down your insulin even more.
And one other thing I will draw attention to is, this made me happy that she realized this. She said she knows she's insulin resistant because of her PCOS diagnosis. PCOS is considered, definitely within the holistic health world, it's pretty much considered that insulin resistance is usually a, if not the primary cause of it. I actually, when I had Dr. Bickman on, I asked him, like, is it accepted now that that's basically the cause? And I mean, he said not conventionally, but usually that basically that's the cause. And I know a lot of women struggle with that. So, and there've been so many studies on, I think when it comes to females and fertility and hormones and fasting, a lot of the studies on fasting females is often looking at PCOS, and it's usually very beneficial, which does not come as a surprise since we know how fasting affects our insulin sensitivity.
Yep.
So it's very exciting.
We have a question from Jessica, and the subject is Q&A. She says, "Hi, Jen and Melanie. I love your podcasts. Thanks for everything that you do. I was just listening to an interview with Rob Wolf on another podcast, and he was talking about how important it is to get enough protein. He was basically saying that while it is really important that we don't eat around the clock, so maintaining some sort of daily fasting protocol, it's also really important to get enough protein in, and it's not easy to do that if you fast too much. He specifically called out one meal a day as being incompatible with sufficient protein intake."
He hasn't met me. Wait, he has met me. Oh my goodness, he has met me. Never mind.
Well, he also doesn't follow my definition of one meal a day. I'm sure he probably is thinking it's 23-1 because that's what people are nowadays, like that just has become the definition of it. Even though back in 2015, when I started my one meal a day group, we were the very first one meal a day group on Facebook. we've never considered it to be 23-1, but you know, ideas take root, and now pretty much the idea is one meal a day is 23-1, and it's hard to get that out of everybody's minds if they're using that terminology everywhere. I will never consider it to be 23-1. I know you don't do 23-1. I bet you he's talking about 23-1. I have never one time in my life suggested that everybody do 23-1. So I just want to say that.
I feel like this happens so often where ideas get crystallized about certain things, and then they're just spit out as fact. We were talking about this earlier in the show. Like just today in my group, somebody was asking about one meal a day, and then somebody commented and was like, they said, "You can't lose weight on one meal a day. It's just for maintenance." And then they quoted somebody. I was just like, I don't know.
That's just suddenly spouted out as truth.
That's why actually one of the only rules of our group is phrase everything as opinions. It's so important with all of this that we say, I think it's the case that this is the way it is. Because we honestly don't know anything, and it's so easy to just spit out something as a fact, and then once one person hears it, everybody hears it. And
all those tens of thousands of people that have been in my groups that have lost weight with one meal a day, they didn't really lose weight? Okay, no, they did. They did lose weight.
I do not at all like censorship or anything like that, but I do debate. If somebody says something as a like straight-up fact, even if it's a fact I agree with, it's really important to me that we add "I think," because all it takes is people reading things as facts, and then they run with it. It's like the telephone game, you know, where you whisper one thing and then it changes. And so, tangents. Shall we finish her question?
Yes. So she goes on to say, "I found this a bit concerning as I have been fasting for almost a year now. And for the last several months, I've been doing 24, which is pretty much one meal a day." Well, yeah, as Melanie and I define it, yes. But maybe not as Rob Wolf defines it. That would be really important to know. Maybe he was talking about 23-1, and I suspect he was. "I know you both follow a loose one meal a day protocol, and I, of course, know how much Melanie appreciates the paleo lifestyle and Rob Wolf as a proponent of it. So I thought you guys might have some helpful insights. Thanks again, and keep up the awesome work you do. Jessica from Portland.
All right, Jessica, thank you for the question. So yes, I'm a Rob Wolf fangirl, if there ever was one. For those who are not familiar, he wrote the New York Times bestselling, which Jen is also a New York Times bestseller. He wrote the New York Times bestselling book, The Paleo Solution. He also wrote Wired to Eat and his most recent book called Sacred Cow, which is actually, I had him on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking podcast for that show. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But yes, he's basically one of the founding father figures of the paleo movement. And he is big on the role of protein and the importance of protein and diet. And we actually talked about this in that interview that I did. I brought him on for Sacred Cow. So the interview was about like the environmental impacts and the implications of having or not having animals and regenerative agriculture and the future of our environment. One of the most fascinating conversations and books I've ever read. If I had him on the show, I was obviously going to ask him all the other things. So we did talk a lot about protein. It's funny because, yes, a lot of people will say that you can't get enough protein in a shortened eating window. And actually, when I had Cynthia Thurlow on the show, she as well said, especially for women, that she finds this often to be a problem. And I actually do think this might be a problem for a lot of women because they don't have the problem that I have, which is I have the opposite problem. Like, I can eat so much protein and animal protein, which is like the most complete form and dense. And I mean, I can eat pounds and pounds of it easily. So I don't have the experience of struggling to eat enough of it. When I aired the episode with Cynthia Thurlow, listeners, if you're interested in this, also listen to that episode because we dived even deeper into protein. We did talk about this, how much protein, especially women need and how it might be a problem with fasting. And when I posted that episode, I was actually really surprised that that was the thing that my audience seemed to identify with, or it really hit home with them the most, because I do a weekly giveaway in my Facebook group where you can comment what you learned from the episode. And so many people said that hearing that about protein intake was a really big thing for them. So I think we already said this, but no, I do not think one meal a day is incompatible with sufficient protein. I don't think that at all. That said, I think there are some nuances to it. I think some people, if you're struggling to eat enough protein, which I recommend probably 1 gram per pound of body weight, and that's on the high side compared to the conventional recommendations, because I think the conventional recommendations, like the standard American recommendations, I think are per, it's like 1 gram, I could be wrong, but I think it's 1 gram per pound of lean body mass, which ends up being less. But I like to aim for 1 gram per pound of body weight. And I personally have no problem achieving that. If you do find that you can't really get in enough protein in your one meal a day, I think there's nothing wrong with having a longer eating window to accommodate for that. Also, if you're specifically looking to build muscle, so you don't have to have protein throughout the day to build muscle, to support muscle, not at all. We've talked about this so many times on this show. That said, if you're looking to make substantial muscle gains, I think there is a benefit to having punctuated times of protein intake set apart, because there is a cap to the amount of muscle growth that you can do at any one time. And so if you want to get a growth stimulus like twice throughout the day, you would probably need to have 2 separate protein meals. That might be more accommodated by like a 16-8 approach. Long story short, I think protein intake is key. I think emphasizing it is super important for health, for bone health even, for weight loss. It's a highly thermogenic food. It supports body composition. It supports health. We need protein. Yes, I think you can get it in your one meal a day, but if you're not, definitely be open to lengthening the window.
Yeah, I think that's great. Also, don't forget, our bodies are recycling protein during the clean fast. That's one of the things that happens with autophagy. So not all of our protein intake has to come from food you're putting into your mouth. Just keep that in mind. One thing I love, and I actually learned it from you, Melanie, and have since, you know, read more about it, is Ted Neiman's protein leverage hypothesis, which makes so much sense. You know, because I don't listen to podcasts, so I've never heard him on a podcast say it, but I've read about it since you mentioned it. But, you know, anybody that's read anything I've written or listened to me on this podcast knows that I'm a big believer that our bodies communicate with us and want us to have what we need. And so we get signals like hunger when we're not sending what we need to our bodies, if we're not sending enough nutrients down. And the protein leverage hypothesis is that basically protein is a need that we will meet And our bodies will say, keep eating, keep eating, keep eating until you've met that need. I think that's true. Just, you know, with myself, I think it's really true. I think it's true for lots of nutrients, but protein specifically, because it's something we really, really need. Like, I don't always eat meat. I had meat last night. Let me think. Am I going to have meat tonight? Yes, going to have meat tonight. And then the next night I won't, because I'm thinking about the meals I have in my kitchen with my Green Chef meals. Anyway, so with the meals that I have coming up that I have in my kitchen, I'm not going to have meat every night. But if I go several nights in a row and I don't have meat, and maybe a week with no meat, my body is like, have some meat. And I think it's, you know, my body lets me know when I need more protein, or maybe I'll feel like throwing eggs on something, or I'm just not satisfied. So I really think it's true for me. My body lets me know when I need more meat or more protein. I also get a lot of protein through beans. So I wouldn't worry about it. Unless you feel like you're hungry. If you are not satisfied, it might be that you don't have enough protein, and consider having more.
I 100% agree with the protein leverage hypothesis theory. Like, I am not full in my one meal day until I have had my, until my body, I think, has received the protein that it needs. It's so interesting. People often posit fat as being super key for satiety, but it doesn't create the same satiety effects that protein does, for example. It doesn't encourage long-time satiety. So protein, according to at least Ted's book, protein is the only macronutrient that encourages both short-term and long-term satiety, which is just, sorry, that's a tangent. But I think we think protein is very important. And it all comes back to what we always say, which is N of one and find what works for you. I would be really interested to know what interview, Jessica, that you were listening to where he said that. I just would like to hear what he said. Feel free to send it.
Yep, that would be great to know.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. So a few things for listeners before we go. If you would like to submit your own questions to the podcast, you can directly email questions at ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. You can follow us on Instagram. I got sad because I checked to see when this was airing, and I thought maybe this would have aired before Valentine's Day, but this will be after Valentine's Day. Friends, if you're not on my Instagram, get on it, because on Valentine's Day, I'm giving away so many epic things on my Instagram. This week, we're doing a signed book giveaway for Dr. Ellen Christensen's The Thyroid Reset Diet. Yesterday, I put up a giveaway for $3,000 worth of blood tests from Inside Tracker giveaway, like completely free. And then on Valentine's Day, Apollo Neuro, the sound wave therapy device that I have that I'm obsessed with, they asked if I wanted to give away two on Valentine's Day.
Like for a couple?
Because they were like, do you want to do a giveaway? I was like, sure. They're like, do you want to do one for Valentine's Day? I was like, sure. They're like, do you want to give away two? I was like, sure. So basically, friends, get it on my Instagram because there are so many things.
And so if people are, they're going to miss it, and it's too late because this will already come out, but you join today because you never know what's coming out tomorrow.
I know. I'm on like the giveaway roller coaster now. I'm like,
I'm not going to give you anything. You can look at my cat.
I know. Jen is not the giveaway profile. You could give away signed copies of your book.
I could.
I give away a lot of beauty counter on my Instagram.
I'm going to show you my cat. And if I do something fun with beans, and that's pretty much it.
I think it's so fun. Check us out on Instagram. And you can find all of the stuff that we like at ifpodcast.com/stuffwelike. All right. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. Anything from you, Jen, before we go?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.